This is CX of M Radio, the voice of customer experience professionals.
LinkedIn presents.
Welcome to another episode of Press One for Nick. Your host, Nick Glimsdahl, is the Director of Contact Center Solutions at VDS. Through conversations with customer service and customer experience leaders, Nick and his guests exchange insightful stories, best practices, and invaluable lessons they have learned along the way.
Welcome to the Press One for Nick podcast. My name is Nick Glimsdahl, and my guest this week is Tony Amante Sheppers. He is the Director of Operations and Customer Experience Success at Curbside Kitchen. Tony, welcome to the Press One for Nick podcast.
Nick, thanks for the invite.
You are welcome. So one question I ask every single guest is, what's one thing people might not know about you?
I knew you were going to ask this because I've watched a few of your recordings, and I wanted it to be completely unrelated to my professional career. And so I thought of things people may not have known. I ran with the Bulls in Spain, but people know that. Some people know that I ran with the Bulls in Spain. They wrote an article about me in CNN, and I actually wrote CNN saying, no, you got the story wrong. I actually ran into the corral by accident, so please adjust that so I look more stupid. But people know that story. So I was thinking what to tell, and it was when I was a kid, 8, 9, 10 years old, I'd go to the babysitter down the street. Both my parents worked. And for some reason, in Michigan, crazy weather would occur in the summertime, as you know, in Ohio. And I thought at age 8 or 9, along with my friends, that we could control the weather. So I'm on top of a little hill in my babysitter's front yard. And as the wind comes, we're moving our hands, and we see the rain clouds coming from a distance, and then the rain's coming. So in a world where you really think you have no control at a very young age for a hot 5 minutes, we thought we were in charge of the weather. And I don't think anyone knows that.
Unless there's somebody that was in your babysitting school class that you're like, yes, I remember controlling the weather. And he or she are probably also listening to the Press One for Nick podcast.
Yeah, but she would never admit it, I'm sure.
That's awesome. I remember as a kid, you'd put your fingers up and you can almost squeeze the plane as you're driving by, and you can almost carry it. That's not an aviation podcast. This is talking about customer experience, Tony.
That's right.
So speaking of customer experience, let's talk about it at the very beginning. How do you define success in customer experience?
Defining success in customer experience for me, it's the little wins. You can't do a waterfall approach and keep it bottled up and go from department to department and 6 months to a year later say, all right, let's release our future state. It has to be those little wins. Find those band-aids you can put over a problem you see if you're recently hired at a company and say, we'll come back to it and find a long-term fix. But go after those little wins. And those little wins to me, when a customer says, thank you, when a customer says, I'm going to talk about you in the positive, when the employees you work with say, I like this, this is working, I'm feeling appreciated. Yeah. Those little wins, that to me is pure customer success.
Yeah. Well said. We've talked now a handful of times, and every time I feel like we have these conversations about customer experience and customer experience leaders. And, you know, we always go back to there's so many leaders in customer experience that kind of started in this new CX role, and quickly they hit this wall and they aren't moving the needle fast enough. And leadership's like, customer experience, and just to appease the leadership, right? So what guidance or advice would you have for these CX leaders who are kind of at that wall mark and they're about to hit it?
It doesn't even have to be to a CX leader. I would go bottom up and say coordinators to entry-level managers to presidents, to VPs, to even the CEO, him or herself. When it comes to customer experience, I've got steps that I take, and I can go into more details with you during this call, Nick. But to me, I kind of bucket it into three steps at the high level. One is you got to earn trust internally. If you can't work with your coworkers, you will get nothing done. So earn that trust as quickly and thoughtfully as you can. Secondly, numbers don't lie, and statistics are nearly everything. Really dive into the numbers. When I was younger, I would kind of avoid the numbers. My father said I'm more of a music guy than the numbers guy. And so I went into that bucket, but that's not true. for me anymore, and you can't be that way. So really know the numbers. And then third, after you've done some of those quick fixes, really understand what that future state should look like and iterate. There's no stopping what you need to do to get that future state as perfect as possible. So understand who you're working with, make sure you're in that trust, know the numbers, and constantly iterate on what that future state should be.
I love it. So the first thing you mentioned, obviously, was trust. Why is it so important to be that first thing, to earn trust first?
If you don't, you are up a creek without a paddle. It's never the the Nick show or the Tony show or the Susie show. It's a team show. I really enjoy startups and growth stage companies, and that tends to lean towards or attract very entrepreneurial spirits, but very few people. You don't, and you shouldn't hire 100 people on the outset of starting a business. So when you have so few people, you really need to earn those trusts of those individuals at a larger scale. And an established company, Fortune 500 or similar, there are established guardrails, there are established departments, and that will take time to chip away at what they think is working, but really isn't. So earning the trust first and foremost in a small company needs to happen, because people talk very, very quickly. And in a larger company, you need to earn that trust, because there's so many hoops you have to jump through just to move that needle an inch.
Yeah, I would say there's, as you continue to grow in the different size organizations all the way up to the Fortune 100s, Fortune 50s, you have to play these internal games and relationships that are built. And relationships are built on trust, regardless if they're a peer or somebody in a completely different department. Right. If you're trying to drive that business forward or that experience forward, you have to get their buy-in, help maybe understand their why and what they're solving for, what they're measured on, and then kind of go reverse engineer back to what that current situation was and how to drive that experience. And if you can't align and keep those guys happy and have that consistent communication, then there's that erosion, and erosion isn't good for any bridge.
I totally agree. And I have a little example that can help anybody earn that trust faster than what they may think is possible. My friends call me out when I ask what they say are Tony questions. I think you and I chatted about this when we first met. Tony questions can range from anything out of the blue of, if you were in a, how long could you survive in a lighthouse if you had to guard it and you only had internet and food brought to you once a month? You know, that's like an obscure question, but it kind of talks about your, you know, level of sanity and ability to be alone and how much you like the ocean. To more professionally, I oftentimes ask at the beginning, what is it that you wish would be fixed about what you do every day that you haven't been able to fix? Not because you haven't had the capability. It's not about you. It's about the company. So when you take the pressure off the person and kind of, in a way, if you want to say, blame the company, you know, the big building that moves and so forth. You know, what would you like changed if you could? And these sort of esoteric questions really break down the barrier and show the human side of me as a CX leader, as an operations person, and engages the person I'm speaking with so that they put the guard down and that trust is built immediately. So think of Tony questions, or if your name is Johnny, think of Johnny questions, and just kind of have them be slightly obscure and fun.
All right. From now on, I'm just going to call them Tony questions, and people are not even going to know who you are. And they're like, I'm just like, no, don't worry about it. They're Tony questions.
All my first book written will be the Tony question.
I love it. So in the organizations or in businesses, there's always different types of stages, specifically in the startup, right? It's the launch, it's the grow, it's the expand, and then mature, and then hopefully not decline. So how does CX play a role in that? Is there a better way to improve that? Like, can they play a role in each step? And maybe do you guys have any examples from what you guys have gone through at Curbside Kitchen?
So you're asking in the launch, growth, expansion, maturity stages of a business, where does CX play? I mean, it plays in every part. The company I'm with now, a Curbside Kitchen, I've been with almost a year. It came out of a nice bottle of wine between the husband and wife team and a desire to harness this wild, wild west of food trucks. How can I order on an app from a food truck? All these food trucks are so disconnected from each other, from the events they go to, all these one-offs, you know? And so that grew out of a desire to solve that dilemma. How do you make that customer experience from ordering from a food truck faster and more enjoyable? And you know, with a slight paper trail as well, you want to see what you get. That's at the launch stage. Today, I'd say we're between launch and growth, you know, hiring more people, really getting our tech in order. We're not looking at customer experience solely through the foodies lens, which would be you as a customer ordering on the app, but also through the food trucks lens. COVID has destroyed so many food trucks out there, and the ones that are alive today are surviving. They're not thriving yet. So offering them opportunities through their lens, how can we get them to an event faster, more seamlessly? How do we get them paid out more quickly? Guaranteed minimums. If you go to an event and two people show up, they want a guaranteed amount of money because they're making food. That's a customer success through the lens of the food truck. And then the third vertical that we have are the commercial real estate buildings, the tenants, the landlords, the universities, the departments at hospitals. You know, when we enter an expansion stage or even like pure maturity stage down the road as a business, we absolutely need to always be thinking about that client. Are they wanting a monthly subscription? Are they wanting a one-off sort of big event with a lot of food trucks? Looking at it through their lens is important as well. So I guess the point is, no matter what stage you are in a business, looking at what you're making through as many customers' lenses as possible is very healthy, but to know who your customers are is also very important.
Yeah, I love that. The one thing I want to ask is, you know, when it comes to the food truck owners, they're trying to always do more with less because they're usually the one-man band or the one-woman band, or maybe it's a couple or whoever it is. So how at Curbside Kitchen are you guys alleviating that pain and reducing effort to add more value to the people who are actually serving the food?
Yeah, reducing friction. I mean, I've learned quite a bit over the year being here. I thought it would be quite simple. You know, food trucks, they want events. We take our percentage, we send them to an event, everybody wins. And that's not quite the case. As we continue to emerge out of COVID and getting into winter now, our pitch to the food trucks has turned into, we have guaranteed events for you. You can plan out months in advance. We have guaranteed minimums, so you know you're not walking away cashless. We have the ability for people on our app, the foodies, the customers, to order 48 hours in advance so that you as the food truck owner can plan accordingly, going to Costco, going to the local grocery store, getting the amount of food you need to Sam's Club or whatever. They can plan accordingly. They don't have to be shouting a person's name or selling their wares because we also do that marketing. And we've changed our marketing as well. We're putting more expectation and onus on the property that partners with us. They initially were expecting us to do all the marketing. And while I would say we're somewhat of a marketing company to an extent, it's the building that requested the food trucks that need to do that marketing. So we help them create flyers and we suggest social media, Instagram, of course, LinkedIn even as well, to really engage their clients, their tenants, their customers. The food truck needs help. I talked to many, many, many of them. Food prices are increasing, as we all know. They don't want to walk away with less in their pocket than what they came with. So guaranteeing minimums, guaranteeing events as far in the future as possible, and making sure that they can see orders coming in up to 2 days in advance has really been quite telling in this industry and very helpful.
In a competitive market, does your customer service stand out from the crowd? One way to offer a better experience is by moving your contact center to the cloud. But with so many options to choose from, how do you know which solution is the best for both your business and your customers? That's where VDS comes in and guides you to the best solution. They understand your clients' pain points, business outcomes, and goals. Then VDS designs, implements, supports, and provides 24/7 managed services. From start to finish, VDS is committed to finding the best solutions for your clients' needs. To learn more, go to www.govds.com or find a link in the show notes.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm always trying to figure out, like, put myself in the consumer's perspective, like the one who's receiving the service. What does that look like? And what do they truly value versus what does the organization think that they value? And sometimes there's a gap between those two.
Right.
And I think even with customer experience, like customer experience is great, but you know, how do you drive? And I guess that's a question for you, is how do you drive initiative forward to meet the business objective? Because it's not just about CX. I always talk about the pixie dust and fairy tales of customer experience. It's not always just about that. It's about meeting the business objectives and driving the business forward.
I would go back to the three themes of earning trust internally, knowing the numbers, and constantly iterating. But to dive deeper, to know if your customer experience endeavors are successful or not, one really needs to think through what it is the customer is receiving from you, the company. Here's an example. I walked in the shoes of the foodie, the person that's receiving our text messages, that's ordering on the app and going up to the food truck. And I said, all right, I'm gonna sign up and I'm gonna say I'm gonna go to an event. I'm gonna see how many text messages I get as a person that's downloaded the Curbside Kitchen app. And it was a lot. I think we were sending out anywhere between 4 and 6 text messages up to the point of them actually getting their food. 2 days before, hey, a food truck's coming. A day before, a day and a half before, hey, you can order. The day of, hey, the food truck's here, order if you haven't. When the food truck checks in, hey, the food truck's here. Hey, the food truck's about to leave. Like, it's way too many, way too many. My wife texts me less than that. I mean, like, I don't want so many texts from a bot. So right now we're changing that and making it much more user-focused, making it so that they receive a notification 2 days prior, order now, here's a link. We didn't have a link before. To, hey, the food truck's here, order or show up because they leave by 2. So back to my three themes, I'm getting that pushed through relatively easily because I've earned the trust of the people on my team, the owners of the company. I know that needs to happen because I've looked at the numbers and saw that too many text messages are going out and our foodies are not liking it. And then iterating upon it. We over-indexed. We were sending too many messages out on purpose to see if that would be helpful. And we iterate on it. We're iterating on that and doing less. So again, earn trust of the people you work with. Know the numbers, constantly change.
Yeah, I love it. So there's this famous guy, Mr. Mike Tyson. he said that everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face. Now, he says it with a little bit different pitch, but I believe the same is true in customer experience, right? It's what I mean by that is it doesn't matter how perfect the plan is. Someone is going to complain about something, or maybe you don't hit the expectations that you want or that they want. They expect. And so what happens when things don't go as planned, because specifically in startups, when they don't go as planned, you have a little bit more visibility to them.
Yeah. Is there a question there? We always.
Yeah. What happens when things don't go as planned?
Things don't go as planned. That's what happens. Here's a case in point. There are fewer food trucks out there than ever before. And my boss, the CEO, says, you know, we're sick and tired of okay food trucks. We have a growing competitor out there that is backed by private investors. And honestly, they're taking some of our trucks. What they're doing is taking any truck that will come their way, however. That has been a punch to our stomach. And we have fewer trucks. We don't have those trucks been vending for us currently that are with the competitor. Honestly, that's okay. Why? Because there's going to be a tipping point where the competitor is not charging the fees we charge and thus not providing the service they charge and not providing the service that they should be providing because they're not charging enough. We charge a little bit more, but guess what? We have Zendesk. If you have a problem, you can text us, you can call us, email us. Somebody's going to respond to you within 7 minutes guaranteed. We have somebody working with us full-time off hours in the Middle East, as well as somebody working full-time here in the States. Secondly, when we got punched in the face with that sort of grab of our trucks, within a couple of weeks, a client we wanted to have but didn't because a competitor got it, is communicating with us and saying, you know what, you know, this support service that you thought would be there isn't, and you know, it might just be worth working with you guys. So let's talk. I take a punch in the face every day and I get right back up because, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, but also I'm in it for the long haul with any startup, and it's very exciting to get punched, but then get back up again and again and again.
Yeah, I think that's so interesting.
I'm not a masochist, though. I want to be clear about that. I don't prefer it, but it happens.
It sounds like Fight Club at Curbside Kitchen. You're just but you know, the one thing that I wanted to say is there's a guy I just interviewed, Steve Cadigan. He wrote a book. He was the first chief human resource officer at LinkedIn, and he just recently wrote a book called Work Quick. And he's like, I think it's so important. So people, organizations hold on to people because they want to keep them forever because of, you know, he's like, you should encourage them and be their cheerleader, regardless if they stay with your organization or not, because the more information you can give them, the more you can communicate, the more you give them the opportunity to succeed and the more value you're going to bring to them. Even if they leave, sometimes the grass isn't always greener. Right. And the whole boomerang approach, and they come back and they realize, man, this is awesome. And then they're going to tell their friends. And I think the same is true just at your story with the food trucks. Yeah, they might go back and they say, hey, you know what? I really appreciate that high touch, the service, the support that they give, the guarantees, the SLAs. And I want to come back. But by the way, I know these five other food trucks. So I fully believe if you're going to bring the service and you're going to bring the experience along with it, and you back it up by the things that you're going to do, you will be successful in the industry that you're in.
Another example to your point, essentially say not burning bridges, which I 100% respect and agree with. I worked at Oyo Hotels, biggest Indian hotel chain in Asia over there. And they came to the States about a year before COVID came. And I was hired as director of customer success and operations for the Mid-Atlantic, had numerous dozens of people reporting to me who then managed the relationships with the hotels as they got onboarded. There were some hotels out there that were dilapidated and needed remodeling, refurbishing, and we would give them money to do that. And one gentleman in particular in the Virginia market had a lot of hotels, and he signed up with us, got a lot of money, and concerned he wasn't spending the money effectively. So what I did was I posted one of the managers who reported to me at his properties that were in a driving distance. And she would just go and ping pong every day to all of them. And it wasn't to have a watchful eye, but a helpful hand. And she knew the hotel industry like anyone, and suggested ways where he could spend his money more effectively in remodeling. It ended up being the four hotels that this gentleman owned ended up being our shining star. And in terms of average daily revenue and average daily rate that tended to be higher than other hotels that we had. And because of that, because he did so well with us, he gave us referrals of 3, 4, 7, 8, 10 more hotels.
Yeah,
I made that decision to post that wonderful, wonderful manager there, and it paid dividends. So just know where the extra handholding will be worth the investment, and hopefully it will help you.
So I like the story because it's some people want to just be self-serviced. Mm-hmm. They just want to figure it out on their own. And then there's the completely opposite side of the spectrum. And they're like, I want to interact with the human, and I want every step aligned so I can figure out making sure I don't screw up. And back to the hotel story, I think some people are like, I already know what I need to fix. I've already talked to, ranked them in order, prioritize them, have the budget, and let's roll. And other people are like, this isn't my strength. Like, I just need help. And some people don't necessarily even ask for it because they don't know where to ask or what questions to ask. And so you took
or they're
initiative.
Too prideful. They don't want to ask because they don't want to show some hubris. Yeah.
Yeah. Regardless of the level, I don't care if you're a billionaire or a hundredaire, the pride tends to get in the way.
I totally agree. And reminds me of another example of working in the international education industry. I have those unique set of chops of, at a very young age, running my own business for a while, sending college students in the States overseas on internships. And so I would partner with small businesses across Asia, Europe, and South America, offer them interns for the summer, for a semester, come back, package those, and offer those opportunities, all inclusive to students at universities. And there were a few students from a university I very badly wanted to partner with in California, because if I got in that bloodstream, it would be gangbusters. And so I didn't overextend my team to make sure those couple students were having a good time, but I offer those unexpected, I don't want to call them gifts, but those unexpected moments. So I remember asking them certain questions, you know, as simple as favorite color, or what are you most fearful of about going overseas? And they were most fearful of, like, not having enough space in a suitcase upon leaving with gifts. And so upon their arrival to Europe, we actually had duffel bags with our brand on it ready for them, so that they could check that upon departure, full of gifts that they bought. Little things like that, you know, it's easy, it's simple. I know our mutual friend Dan Gingis goes into great detail in his recent book, The Experience Maker, and it's really easy if you just think about it. And I'm hired often to help scale such opportunities, to help scale businesses. So it doesn't have to be these one-off gifts or thinking moments. You can easily scale such wow factors.
And it was something that they didn't ask for.
Absolutely.
I think that's the key, is that, you know, I don't remember if it was in Dan, he'll yell at me, but I don't know if it was in his book or someone somewhere else that I read. I'm going to give the credit to Dan regardless, sure. But with like the Ritz-Carlton, if they know that you're going to have it at an extended stay, they will find a picture of your family, put it in a frame, and put it next to your bed. And yeah. I was like, man, that is like, that's a different level than just being like, oh, here's your name tag and here's a couple oranges. Best of luck. Hope you have a great day. It's
Have you been to Marriott International's headquarters in Bethesda, Maryland, Nick?
I have not. No.
It's interesting. I was a management consultant there for a year in their digital department. They have an entire room, and it is glass, so you can see in it and you can see out, full of people smarter than you and me, probably younger than you and me, on social media 24/7. You see all these screens up there, and they're seeing what guests are saying on social media. And if somebody has a complaint or somebody has a wow thing, these individuals message the hotel, which is a franchise, by the way. You know, Marriott headquarters owns very, very few hotels. These are individually owned mom and pop, you know, Marriotts. They message the front desk staff and say, hey, so-and-so would like this. Heads up, it'd be great if you can make that wow moment possible. Huh. I mean, that Marriott has the money to have an entire staff doing that. You don't need to do that regardless of how much money you have as a company, but that's a way you can scale such wow moments. And right. Wow, the customer will definitely remember.
That's awesome. Well, Tony, I fully expect you to wow me on these next two questions. So the next-
I hate expectations.
Yeah, here they are. No pressure. This is now being recorded. It wasn't the first 30 minutes or however long you've been doing this, but it is now. No, just kidding. So the first one is, what book or person in customer service or customer experience has influenced you the most in the past year? And then the second one is, if you could leave a note to all customer service professionals, it's going to hit everybody's desk Monday at 8 a.m., what would it say?
In my company, what would the note say?
Or no, what would you tell the world of every customer service rep?
I see. I would say be authentic. Not be you, be authentic. Because you could be not what your hiring manager thought you would be. Maybe during your interview process, you were somebody completely different wearing a mask that you shouldn't have been wearing. But be you. It will make you keep your job longer. It will show. A lot of talk is out there of people hiding behind social media we're on Zoom 24/7 due to COVID. Some people choose to not have their camera on. To me, that's very passive aggressive. Have the camera on, put a shirt on, show up. Very, very easy. But be authentic. That's probably what, it's probably the note I would leave. Probably
that's
the
awesome.
Note I would leave.
On every interview, I never wear a shirt and I always wear a physical mask. So I don't know how I've got the last couple of jobs, but they just thought I was Nacho Libre or something. I don't know. So what book or person in customer service or customer experience has influenced you the most in the last year?
It's influenced me every year I read it, even though it's slightly becoming out of date, but it needs to be a staple to any customer experience person. And it's Seth Godin's Purple Cow, Transforming Your Business by Being Remarkable. It's a very thin book, so don't feel that you're going to get bogged down. It really is speaking towards marketing and customer experience as one. And have you read it?
I have.
Yeah. I mean, it's very clear in terms of labeling in the positive sense, where a client, a potential client is. And I forget the whole order, but I know you really want what Seth Godin calls a sneezer. You want somebody that speaks so much and so highly about you and so naturally that you're getting business because of it at $0, zero expense. What is the customer lifetime value, the CLV, customer, and that's a customer experience statistic. You know, yeah. Over the lifetime of the customer, what are you actually getting from them?
Yeah.
You have to think about how much it costs for you to acquire them. And if you can get them via a sneezer, as Seth Godin says, you really have won. And speaking further, Seth Godin, he has a daily, every day, 365 days a year, blog entry. Sometimes it's a sentence, sometimes it's three or four paragraphs. I get it every morning. And it really crafts what I say in my weekly roundups on Fridays that I write for my own employer. And I really go across all departments asking what's up, talking about roadblocks, talking about successes, talking about what's happening next week, goals, the statistics as well. But writing that weekly roundup is really crafted by his daily messages I get from Seth Godin. So I highly recommend any and all to sign up for his daily free email.
I love it. Yeah, Seth Godin, he's a legend. So I would recommend that. So what's the best way if my listeners are like, this dude's awesome, I need to connect with him. How are they gonna go about doing that?
First off, look in the mirror, because that person's probably, I'm not a motivational speaker. Well, I have a number of blog entries myself on LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn is the best and easiest to get in touch with me. Shoot me a message. I get them all the time. My personal phone number is on there. My email's on there. You can email me at my current job as well, tony@curbsidekitchen.com. But LinkedIn is probably the best. You can find me in my other hobby of recording jazz music. I sing jazz, so I'm on Spotify if you need some background music while you talk to customers. But LinkedIn's probably the easiest. Tony Amonte Shepherds.
It's awesome. Find Tony on wherever jazz music is played, and don't you will not find me wherever jazz music is played. Not because I don't like jazz music. I just am not. That is not my talent. But I'm glad somebody's out there that does it.
Hey, the Tony, musicians need listeners too.
yeah, I hear that. So Tony, thanks, man. I appreciate your time, and looking forward to staying in touch.
Nick, this was really fun. I appreciate your time.
Hey, listeners, can you think of one person who would benefit from the information you learned today? If so, please consider sharing it with them by giving them a link of this episode or directly from your app. And last, if you'd like to receive all the quotes and book recommendations from all my guests, go to pressonefornick.com/podcast.
Thanks for joining us for this session of CX of M Radio. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and visit cxofm.org for more resources.